You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show, and you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. On today's show, we're going to be joined by Fear the Sword draft guru Trevor Magnotti to talk about North Carolina's Nazir Little, one of the more interesting and polarizing prospects in the 2019 NBA draft. But first, let's get into the good and the bad of the Cavs' 125-118 win over the New York Knicks Thursday night in New York. The win keeps the Cavs in the number three spot in the draft order currently. They are two full games behind of the Knicks, who are a game behind of the Suns. The Cavs are currently at 15 wins, the Knicks at 13, and the Suns at 12. The Suns, the only team in the NBA currently with 50 losses. From here, the Cavs play twice this weekend at home against the Pistons and the Orlando Magic on Sunday. Okay, the good from the game was that I thought the Cavs got four really good performances. Jetty Osman, Colin Sexton, Jordan Clarkson, Kevin Love were all really solid. Osman had some really nice all-around moments. He had a big three late in the game. He and Love connected on one of my favorite plays of the night when he pushed the ball up the floor, fed Love at the elbow, kept running, outran his man, Love fed him, he got an easy bucket. That was awesome. We saw Sexton's speed full on display in this game. He was pushing the pace, he was really zipping up and down the court in this one, did a better job on defense in certain spots, although he did struggle a little bit with Dennis Smith Jr. as opposed to Alonzo Trier. Also was very confident shooting the three ball in this one. Colin has come so far in that regard. We've gone from, you know, him passing up that three from the corner that was wide open early in the season, if you remember that, to him taking six in this one. He only made two, but the form looks good. His confidence is good. He got to line a little bit in this one as well. 6-9 from the field. Three assists, no turnovers for Sexton. So a good game from him. That's really solid. Going to Jordan Clarkson, a 29-minute game for him, 22 points, where he really went off in the first quarter in particular to kind of get the Cavs some life when they needed it. 3 of 8 from 3. Had a really big defensive play as well in this one. His offense, obviously, is going to be what drives his value 99.9% of the time. But Jordan Clarkson maybe had his best defensive play in this one. He had a steal late, ended up being a foul, just played really good off-ball defense, very aware off-ball defense. That's so abnormal for him, so just really good credit to him. And he also had that really big bucket late in the third when they went to that deadly Clarkson set where Clarkson runs that, just quickly cuts, beats his man deadly, feeds him, and Clarkson uses his skill and his suave to finish at the rim there with good body control. And Kevin Love, look. Kevin Love was Kevin Love after a slow first quarter. He comes out in that second quarter, just asserts himself, starts making shots, starts just looking more like Kevin Love in this one. He's a big reason, probably the main reason why this team got back into the game in the second quarter after that slow start in the first. So kudos to Kevin Love. He just makes this team better. 6-12 from the field for him, 3-6 from three. Went to the line, here's the key thing, 11 times, made all 11 free throws, 8 boards, and had a block and 3 assists. So look at these four guys. You look at this entire team for the most part. You know, Larry Nance Jr. had a negative plus minus. We'll get to Marquese Chris later. He was pretty bad. But I thought pretty much everyone played pretty solidly. We're going to have some little things that weren't great, you know, but and we're not going to talk about him much. But I thought Brandon Knight had a really good first half, and he finished with some good three-point makes in this game. I think everyone pretty much had good minutes. Chris is the one guy, although he did have 7 boards, that just wasn't very good. But I liked what I saw from most everybody on the team in this game. But those four guys in particular, Colin Sexton, Love, Osman, and Clarkson really leading the way, which makes sense considering they're kind of the four guys leading the Cavs in a variety of different areas right now. And they all kind of contributed when they needed to, came up big, all had some mistakes too, to be fair, but like that we saw them just play a little bit better. And against zone defense and then running zone defense, the Cavs actually did some good stuff in both regards with these. They went to it late on their end of the floor to really give the Knicks a different look. They executed it well. They were rotating well. As we've seen in the past, there wasn't one guy kind of running like to cover other people's mistakes or because they were in the wrong spot. It was pretty organized. It rotated well. It's the Knicks, so it's not like the Blazers or a good team, but that's progress for the worst defense in the NBA. And also on the offensive end, this is a team that has struggled so much against zone defenses this year. It is something I've just been surprised more teams don't just do a version of to really kind of put the brakes on the Cavs offense. But in this one, they moved the ball well. They took advantage of a bad Knicks defense and executed well. But they're executing just a little bit better in that regard. Even when Kevin Love was not on the floor, I think they did a better job, which is a good sign. I thought Larry Drew, to his credit, also made the right lineup adjustments in this game. So we saw for this game, in this game, the Kevin Love at the five for the first time. It was against Mitchell Robinson, who's this very long. He's called the Block Ness Monster. He's really lanky. He's a pretty much a traditional shot blocking five. A lot of potential there. But he went with Love at the five for this small stretch to really pull Robinson out of the paint, to give the Knicks a different look. It's the first time we've seen that since Love has come back from injury. I don't know how much we're going to see it going forward, but that was a good wrinkle for Larry Drew to pull out in that moment. I also like that he went to Nick Stauskas to start the fourth. You know, I think Stauskas should be ahead of Chris. I would rather them play smaller than shoehorn in Marquise Chris. I know why they're giving Chris a chance, but I think Stauskas has just more utility. I talked about that on yesterday's show, but Stauskas came in, got 7 minutes in the fourth, was part of a smaller group, and I like that Drew went there. Like that he went to him and Mike Longobardi went to that zone defense in the game. Those were inspired choices, and I think Drew, to his credit, with Kevin Love back in particular, has done a pretty good job of like kind of coaching this team up as he gets into the last 5-6 weeks of his time as Cavs head coach. And again, free throw shooting was big in this game. The Cavs go to the line 36 times. They make 29 of those. The Knicks, comparatively, 23 free throw attempts, 15 makes. Kevin Love with 11. Sexton with 9, which is big for him. Clarkson with 6 as well. And Jetty Osman, 4. So not surprising, the guys that were really leading the Cavs also were the guys, by and large, that got to the free throw line more than everybody else. And look, a good win for the Cavs. I think overall, the big takeaway from this is that they were resilient. This wasn't a team that, when they got down by as many as 9, when they really struggled to string together consistent minutes, when they lost the third quarter 38-20, they could have keeled over, they could have lost. They hung in there, they chipped away, they made that big run late, and they win this game, beating the New York Knicks on the road, outscoring the Knicks 40-21 in the fourth quarter. So kudos to the Cleveland Cavaliers for this win. Don't worry about the draft order too much. They're still in the top three. If you look at their strength of schedule, again, they have one of the hardest schedules the rest of the way. I think they're going to still get a very good draft pick, and I think just enjoy this one for what it is. We're going to take a quick break here from our fantastic sponsors, and then we're going to be back to get into the few little bad things of this game. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. And we are back. Okay, so the bad from this game. I'm out on Marquise Chris. Marquise Chris is not a good NBA player. 13 minutes for him, a team worst negative 14 plus minus, 0-5 from the field, 0-3 from 3, 7 rebounds, was just beat badly defensively on several occasions. Doesn't really know what to do on the defensive end, doesn't really know what to do in a pick and roll. He's a guy that, if you're looking at two-way contracts for next season or a reshaped roster next year, if he's on the edge of that roster and you have him for very cheap and you have maybe, and you're like, okay, this guy is going to be 22 years old next year, we can maybe mine him into something. I don't hate that. Again, I think a two-way deal for him would be kind of interesting. You don't know what your front court's going to look like beyond next season with Tristan's contract situation and everything. He's still really young. He's very athletic. Maybe just some time away where he could just really hone his skills is not the worst thing in the world. But he's just not good right now. Some time in the G League might kind of really be a good thing for him. He's just got a lot he really needs to learn, and I think he needs a little pressure time to kind of figure some stuff out. He's very young, he's very athletic, but not a high IQ player. Doesn't really set screens, doesn't really use his body in smart ways. He just kind of flails when he's out there, so not the best. And look, I don't think Nick Stauskas is the best player. I don't think Nick Stauskas always plays the smartest brand of basketball, but he at least has a better track record of being an NBA player, so I would rather see him play right now than Marquese Chriss. I think he just has more utility. The Cavs' defense remains very bad. They did buckle down late. They did have some good moments in this game. They also just had some really bad issues in terms of ball stopping. You had a lot of Knicks instances where they got out on the break, really pushed the ball, and really got to the rim with ease against this Cavs defense. In the half court, you saw Jetty Osman in the first half in particular did a really bad job of sealing guys off, of using his footwork to stay in front of his man and to make good defensive plays. Jordan Clarkson, who, again, has the worst defensive RPM among point guards that aren't Trae Young, that aren't a rookie who is new to the league, had some really bad miscues in this game. He just got beat off the dribble. He made a really big play late, but his body of work in this game on the defensive end is just not very good. Overall, you should not be giving up as many points to the Knicks as they did. The New York Knicks scored 50 points in the paint. They scored 13 points off Cavs turnovers. They had an offensive rating of 120.5, which the Cavs were better on offense. They finished with an offensive rating of 127.7. But that's when you have the Knicks, who are not a good offensive team, who are not a good team in general, scoring that many points, that tells you just how bad your defense is and how many kind of just miscues the Cavs really made in this one. And if you go to Cleaning the Glass, the Ben Falk stats kind of space day where they kind of put things into a little more context in terms of for the whole season. Here's the New York Knicks four factors numbers in this game. So points per possession, 121.6. The Cavs are at 131, so that's really good. But that's in the 82nd percentile of the Knicks. Effective field goal percentage, 54.2. And that's in the 60th percentile. They turn the ball over only 10.3% of the time. That's in the 84th percentile. Offensive rebounded really well in the 87th percentile with 34% offensive rebounding percentage. The Knicks did not shoot well at the rim. That's the one area where they didn't do a ton of damage. They were in the 37th percentile there, but still shot 60%. They made 50% of their mid-range shots, did okay on threes, but really just had a good offensive night against the Cavs. Executed well-ish in the half court. Weren't necessarily good in transition. The numbers actually kind of say that they were not good in transition, but there were just a couple plays where on first looking at this game, where they just beat the Cavs down the floor. And a good team does not do that. A team that has it all together is just not going to let that happen. And that just shows you that despite some good defensive moments, despite some defensive moments that were good from guys that are not good defenders, there's still work to be done. Giving up 180 points to the Knicks, having a defensive rating as bad as it was, should not happen if you're a quality team. That helps the tank. That's tank fuel, but it's not a good sign for this group. And lastly, Ante Zizic had a bad night at the rim. He missed three. He finished the night getting clobbered in the face, so I hope he's all right. At this time, I don't really know what's up with there, but he took a really bad shot to the face late in that game, but missed three shots at the rim. You know, I wanted to see him against Mitchell Robinson in this game because I wanted to see if his footwork and his kind of savvy inside could do well against a guy that has shown really good instincts as a rim protector and has gotten better this season as a rim protector. But Ante, I think, just had some moments here where he just missed some shots he should be making. All in all, you know, not his worst performance. He used his body really well in this game, I thought, to kind of draw contact and get the line a couple times. But just he needs to make those shots. I do think 20 minutes for him the rest of the season is a must. But if he's going to be an effective player, he needs to be making, you know, maybe he doesn't need to make all three because they were somewhat contested. But he needs to make like two out of three of these and kind of be shooting much better than he did in this one. Better than the 3-6 he finished. I think like 4-6, 5-6, he needs to be hyper-efficient at the rim. And look, if he's 50% from the field in a game and he's missing some 18-footers, that's fine. But you look at his shot chart and you look at where he missed, these are right at the rim. These are 2 feet and in shots. That is just not going to cut it for a guy who's going to do all of his work from the elbows and in terms of his actual scoring. So we're going to take one more break here from our sponsors again, and then we are going to hear from myself and Trevor Bagnani talking about Nazir Little from UNC. So stay tuned for that on this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. And joining me now for this week's Draft Friday is the one, the only, Trevor Bagnani. You can find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens, and you can also find his new Fear the Sword podcast, Thick Jack Frames, by looking up Fear the Sword on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. He's a writer at Fear the Sword and The Step Back. Trevor, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we're going to talk about someone I think we've been needing to discuss for a while. He's a name that I think among the top end prospects in this draft has gone a little bit under the radar this year because of, you know, Zion being Zion and RJ and Cam and like Jared Culver rising and the Ja Morant storyline and other guys really pushing themselves up the draft board. We're going to talk about Nazir Little, who plays in North Carolina, who just played in the game against Duke. Trevor, before we get into Little's pros, his cons, etc., considering he's a guy that, in the vein of a Marvin Williams, is not, you know, a starter, does that affect how you evaluate him at all?
I think it does a little bit, and it does for reasons that we're probably never really going to know. I mean, the whole transition of Little moving from his high school All-Star circuit takeover, where he rose up recruiting rankings throughout the second half of his senior season, and then came out and had this monster circuit in the McDonald's All-American game and the Jordan Brand game, and it just looked like, you know, a player that I rated number three in the class coming into the year, to come in and just have such a reduced role for North Carolina, combined with some of the physical changes that we'll talk about here in a little bit that he's undergone since this summer. There's something here that we're missing, and I think that NBA teams are going to take stock of that because they're obviously going to be more privy to that information than we are. I think is the overarching theme of Nazir Little's draft stock is there has to be some sort of context to how this season's gone that we're missing when it comes to projecting him. And that's what's made projecting him so difficult. You know, he is a player who has these flashes of very clear top five talent in this class, but they're flashes. He has not put together a consistent string of games at all this year. He'll have a couple nice outings, and then he'll have a dud where he goes for 4 points, and then he'll have, you know, a couple 10 point games, and then he'll explode for like 23, 24 points off the bench. It just really hasn't been a consistent product for him this year. And I really think there's more context to this story than what from him on the floor.
So to run through his stats and just sort of the basics about Little, he's a 6'6", 220-pound forward from Orange Park, Florida, went to Orlando Christian Prep. He was the number three prospect coming into this class based on the Sports Reference ranking. 28 games at North Carolina as we record this, is shooting 48.8% from the field, a pretty bad 27.5 on threes, 75.6% from the line. Is averaging 9.7 points a game, only playing 18.5 minutes per game, a little rebounding numbers. Trevor, just before we get into the inconsistency of why for you was he number three at the top coming in? Like, obviously, who were you ahead of him? Did you have ahead of him at the start of the year, and why was he number three on your rankings list?
I had RJ number one, and actually now that I'm remembering it, I had Whittle number two and Zion number three. Whoops. So I had Whittle ahead of Zion and number two because he showed a very advanced shot making profile. Wasn't a guy who was going to be consistent knocking down shots from all over the floor in the way that we've seen RJ Barrett be, but had the makings of a primary initiator shooting profile. You know, was able to get some really quality step back looks, was able to go to a pull up three, was able to create his own shot off the dribble with a variety of different moves, and just from a lot of different angles was able to pick up some really good shots off the dribble, in especially on that all-star circuit. I think that he combined that with the finishing, which has been the one thing that has translated this year. His ability to finish at the rim through contact is very good, combined with the defensive potential that he had because he has a 7'2 wingspan. Combined with what we know about the kid, he is a very competitive guy. He's one of those kind of classic throwback guys who's going to just be a little bit of a gym rat and loves competing with guys one-on-one. So I think that all made for a pretty enticing player, a guy who could combine decent defensive potential with that shot making ability and that competitive fire that we love to see that coaches love to see. So I thought that made me buy that he was going to be able to eventually improve into a number one scorer type, and obviously that hasn't happened so far at North Carolina.
So what do you attribute his season to? Does the not starting issue have an effect? Is there something with, you know, just the North Carolina system? Is it him? What do you attribute him being inconsistent, as you've sort of described, being an issue for him?
Well, I think there's a couple things that could potentially be going into it, and obviously I don't have sources. I'm kind of just going off of what we know and speculating a little bit here, so that's an important caveat to throw out. I think one of the major things that has limited him a little bit is in terms of the athleticism. He has noticeably put on a lot of muscle mass since the summer, and he has gone through some physical changes, particularly in terms of his weight and in terms of his muscular build. He's gotten a lot stronger, which I think is something that's a positive, but that has seemed to have a pretty negative effect on his lateral agility and quickness. And I think that has sapped some of his ability to shake guys off the dribble, to be able to get open off ball and to be able to defend well on the perimeter at the same way that we saw flashes of in high school. So I think that's one thing of it. Another thing that I think also could be a potential issue is he was implicated in some FBI stuff prior to the season. The exact details aren't really well fleshed out, and it doesn't seem to be something that is ongoing right now, at least, and maybe revisited once the season's over. But he was at least somewhat implicated in some issues with North Carolina and some issues with that case as well. And that was right before the season started. So that may be something that has a little bit of an issue with it as well. In terms of the on-court stuff, I don't really see much that's obvious. You know, he really doesn't seem to have good defensive feel, and I think that may be a big reason that he's not getting a ton of playing time right now. North Carolina is playing Cam Johnson over him a lot, mostly because Johnson is a fantastic defender who can switch across multiple positions, really understands the defensive system that North Carolina is playing, which you would expect of an upperclassman guy. The degree to which he has played over Whittle is a little bit surprising, but I think that may have something to do with it here as well. So I think it's a combination of each of those factors, plus probably something that we don't know about that could be a little bit of an issue. You know, maybe there's some kind of an antagonistic relationship between him and some coaches or something like that. There's something here that we don't know as well. But that's my best guess at kind of what's been going on with him this year.
So have you, in terms of your view on him as a NBA prospect, have you Are you sort of like still into him, but maybe a little less so? Is it not changed at all? Or have you completely soured on him as someone that would make sense for a team that odds are is going to be picking in the top 4 to 5, which could slide as low as 7, where maybe he's a more kind of an obvious pick at that point, but you know, obviously his sights on picking a bit higher than that.
Yeah, I think that he's definitely going to be in the sights of a lot of the teams that are picking in the back half of the top 10. I think that that's where he's going to end up going. And I think that a lot of that is because at the end of the day, he is a guy that is just going to be able to go out and be an athlete at the NBA level. You know, his quickness isn't really where it was at the high school level, but that kind of has just reshaped what I see him being. You know, it coming into the year, I was anticipating that he was probably going to be an NBA two guard, primarily, that he was going to be playing on the perimeter and being able to defend on the perimeter, as well as take some ball handling load. Now I wouldn't be surprised to see him spend a lot of time at the four at the NBA level. You know, he'll be a little bit undersized at 6'7", but he has the strength, he has the wingspan to be able to defend bigger guys. He seems to do better with that at North Carolina as well. So I think that, you know, he'll be kind of a guy that I think would be somewhere on the Aaron Gordon spectrum, where he, you know, doesn't have a ton of skills and polish right away, but at least is able to get on the floor and go impact the game just because of his athleticism. You know, he's a very good transition scorer, good finisher, smart cutter. And he can do some simple passing stuff. You know, there is a little bit here, and I think that in the right system, there is still development potential with him. But I think right away, I think you kind of have to re-envision what he is, rather than thinking that he's, you know, your potential number one guy. He's maybe your guy that you're throwing in as like a fourth or fifth starter early on in his career, where he's just kind of doing all the athletic things and kind of finishing plays in the way that like a Marquise Chris does for the Cavs right now.
That's, you say Marquise Chris, and I'm just, I gotta, like, I know you don't mean he's Marquise Chris, but like you say that, and that's like, that's a very like toxic thing to lick a guy with. And I don't think you like mean that in like that way, but like,
yeah,
having seen Marquise Chris set a screen this week, like, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, he's just the athletic guy that's on the Cavs now, unfortunately. You know, a better example of what he could be is, you know, you think about what Aaron Gordon was early in his career, you think about what Thaddeus Young was early in his career. Those are guys that, you know, they can impact the game even though it's not really at a high level, and they are for the most part replaceable early on in their careers, but it does mean that they do have some long-term development potential too. I mean, those are both guys who have gotten clearly better slowly and steadily as they've gone on in their NBA careers. And part of it is because both those guys fit the same mold as Little, where they're both incredibly driven too. So you combine that athleticism, especially vertically, with his competitive fire, and I think that there is kind of some long game upside with him. I just don't think that it's going to be as high as we initially thought, and I don't think that it's going to come on early at all. I think he's going to be a guy who is definitely going to peak in his second contract, and that's going to be a bit of a risk for whatever team takes him, because he's probably not going to look very good for the first few years of his career.
Last thing on Little, did you get anything interesting out of him just in terms of watching him play against Duke? Obviously, the Zion thing was the big story of that game, but anything that stood out when in a game with, you know, that rivalry, but also just the level of prospects in that game?
Yeah, I didn't really think that I took much away there, just because, you know, losing Zion was a bit of a issue, and also Little barely played in that game. I mean, he only got, I think, 11 minutes as North Carolina really, really hung on their starting lineup that was absolutely killing everything that Duke was trying to do on offense once Williamson went down. So, you know, I got it why he didn't really play a lot, but also it wasn't really a good matchup to glean anything from. They play again at the end of next week, and I think that that's going to be much more valuable. You know, Little was working back from an injury a little bit as well. He got injured a couple games beforehand. I think had an ankle injury in one of their games prior to that. So he should be a little bit more healthy. Hopefully Duke is getting Zion back as well. And I think that game's going to be a lot more meaningful than this one was, because he just didn't play a ton, and there really wasn't much to take away from it, because he was mostly guarding Jack White and Javon Delorier. And, you know, I really didn't see much value to what he's going to be able to do against both of those guys.
Let's wrap it up this week. We're going to do, I'm charging this pretty much every week. I'm going to hit the tankathon sim and have to deal with whatever situation the Cavs get, and I'll run through where the Cavs pick. And I've got to say, Trevor, this one is just not great. The last time we did this, it was number two. This one's a doozy. I think be a little jarred by this. Are you ready?
Well, I was spinning a couple times earlier today, and I kept getting the Pelicans number one, so I thought that was very interesting. But go yeah. ahead.
All right, number one, rising five spots to number one overall, the Memphis Grizzlies. Number two, okay. rising also five spots, the Washington Wizards. falling to number three, the New York Knicks. Number four, keeping their pick, the Dallas Mavericks. Number five, dropping four spots, the Phoenix Suns. And dropping to number six, one spot above as far as they could drop, dropping three spots, is the Cleveland Cavaliers at number six. It's a pretty bad scenario, I think. But who's like a guy at six, Trevor, that if they did fall that far, that they you would say right now, you would say this is the guy you kind of want to pay attention to?
Okay, so let's try to think through this a little bit, just because those are teams that you do not think. I mean, obviously, first two are probably the same. Grizzlies taking Zion to pair with Jaren Jackson, which, good God,
and it's just not fair.
Yeah, not fair. And then the Wizards taking RJ Barrett, which would just be phenomenal. who is picking three again?
We go to number three. It is the Knicks.
Three is the Knicks. Who knows what they're doing. Four was Dallas. Mm-hmm. Dallas is probably going to go with maybe one of the bigs. I think you're getting into a situation there where, you know, maybe you start looking at one of the point guards. Maybe you look at Darius Garland at that spot, kind of taking the same logic that I've talked about with Kobe White before, where you're taking a guy who can be successful as kind of an off-ball player, but also a distributor as well, that can kind of feed off of what Sexton's going to be able to do. Another good option could be, you know, I keep going back to it, but Jarrett Culver is probably going to be available at six in that scenario, because he's probably going to go in the back half of the top 10, especially if he's going to continue to not be able to shoot, which has been the issue with him in conference play. So I kind of go to those two as like my go-to names, but I wouldn't be surprised if they start looking at some of the other guards like lower down. Like, this could be a spot where Romeo Langford is maybe in play. This could be a spot where Keldon Johnson maybe makes sense for them. I think that would be maybe who I would start to look at the back half of the top 10, maybe looking at a guard that could play a little bit of off ball and has some defensive potential and is probably a long-term development play. Maybe the best option there for them.
It's going to be fascinating and see if they do fall that far. That's obviously a ways away. We got until May 14th, which is going to be a very pivotal day of the offseason. I think probably that and the coaching hire are kind of the two things, more than anything, they're going to set the tone for this Cavs offseason. But Trevor's going to be with us this whole time. You can, again, check out his podcast, Stick Check Frames. Check out his draft viewing guide at For the Sort every week. And be sure to read his big board over at the Step Back. Trevor, as always, thanks so much.
Yep.
Thanks again to Trevor for coming on today's show to talk about Nasir Little. Again, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. A 5-star review is the best way to support the show. If you have mailbag questions for the show, you can get those in to Locked On Cavs on Twitter, Locked On Cavs on Facebook, or LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. I'm going to be setting up a Google voicemail account for the podcast as well, if you want to call in your questions or have a take you want to share, if that's something that interests you. Again, Trevor's on Twitter at Illegal Screens. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. We'll be back tomorrow on Saturday with a recap of Cavs Pistons. That's going to go up a little bit later. I'm not going to be at the game due to something else I have going on, but you will get coverage of that game at For the Sword on this podcast, and then you'll have a recap, of course, on Monday of Cavs Magic on Sunday from the queue. But this has been Locked On Cavaliers for Friday, March 1st. We're getting to the tail end of the season. I hope you guys enjoyed that Cavs win. Revel in it. It's going to probably be one of the more fun ones the rest of the way, I think, because there are some tough games coming, but a good win for them. Don't worry about the draft odds too much. Just enjoy when they go out and win games and look like a real NBA team. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.